everybody kindly silence your cell phones if you haven't done so already. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Just in terms of the format for tonight, each candidate is going to have 3 minutes to introduce themselves, and they'll be allowed 2 minutes to answer each of the questions. And if you can answer the questions in a shorter period of time, that would be great, because that will allow us to get to even more questions during the evening. All questions have been pre-submitted by folks in our community, and they've been reviewed by a committee of Riches Community Center members. And I'm sorry to introduce myself. I'm Kathleen Johnson from Riches Community Center. And thank you to the PTA for inviting me to host the night for you. Where similar questions on the same subject were submitted, we have sometimes combined them into one question so as to allow time for as many questions as possible tonight. No candidates or school district employees or Board of Ed members have been shown questions ahead of time. And we have Stephanie Culverson, who's here tonight. Wave, Stephanie. Who is going to help us with our timing for the evening. So she has two cards. She's going to hold up a yellow card when you're about halfway through your two-minute segment. And then when we get towards 15 seconds left, she's going to hold up a red card. So kind of keep your eyes on her as you're answering the questions. And so let's begin with the introductions. And why don't we start with you?
My name is Lori Ann Patanto. I am currently serving a one-year term on the Board of Education. I am seeking re-election for another 3 years. I am a 17-year resident of Santa Mauritius, and I have a 13-year-old daughter currently in seventh grade. When I decided to take the leap of faith and run for an open seat on the board last year, I knew I had to be true to myself and run with no hidden agenda or motive other than for the betterment of all stakeholders in Santa Mauritius. I dove headfirst into absorbing as much information I could so I could make rational, factual decisions based on actual data. In doing so, I found myself immersed, surrounded by passionate individuals whose common goal was to make our district fiscally and educationally inclusive of all children while keeping our facilities clean, safe, and technologically relevant. I completed our state-mandated board training in only 5 weeks and still continue to use the resources afforded to us on a daily basis. Reading news clips, signing up for webinars and seminars, I felt would be helpful to myself as well as to inject what I've learned into conversation starters to promote growth within the team. I am also the acting data collector for the Board of Education, monitoring and recording information between board members and the administrative cabinet. I've spent time poring over our bus routes in an effort to maximize our usage. I was solely responsible for the reconstruction and revision of the superintendent's rubric, facilitated better usage of the parent portal, and have written articles for the district news to keep community members apprised of our efforts in a concise manner for those that cannot attend our meetings. I also chair our district's legislative committee, which has opened my eyes to the fiscal challenges at the local, state, and federal levels. I am DASA certified and recently completed 8 hours of tactical crisis prevention management. While I don't have a background in education or finance, what I do have is a strong sense of doing what's right. Integrity and honesty are values I uphold in all areas of my life, and I don't take any role or job that has been afforded to me lightly. I believe a good Board of Education member leads with positivity. Building a mutual understanding with administration and the role of a trustee with its limitations and boundaries are key to constructive conversations and decisions. Aligning with the administrative cabinet and understanding the financial and legal constraints regarding contracts, confidentiality, and the New York State Department of Education allows the board to function cohesively. I truly feel I possess all of the qualities needed to be functional, productive, and an important board member, and kindly ask for your vote next Tuesday.
Thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. I think it's great that we're all very interested in hearing what we all have to say. My name is Joshua Foster. I'm currently on the school board, and I've been for 3 years. I have my family's been in Santa Mauritius for 4 generations. My wife's Nicole. We've got 3 boys, Andrew, Alex, and Jared. 10, 7, and 4 on Friday. I coach baseball, and I've coached soccer and basketball at the NYO level. I formed a summer baseball travel league with a bunch of other parents in the district, and we've currently got 50 kids in the league, and I'm also an officer on the Richard Bay Little League. So I'm a general counsel for a business within Honeywell, and what that does for me is it focuses on contracts and on seeing how you know, you need to be able to do more with less, how you need to save so that you can grow in different areas. And I'll explain, you know, how I brought that to the board over the last 3 years. So when I look back as to, you know, 3 years ago, why I wanted to get involved and why I certainly hope to stay involved. I mean, I love this. I love what I'm doing here. I love what I'm doing as a coach. And they're two very, very important things to me because they're tied up with my family and kids. I wanted to ensure that, you know, our kids could have the same level of education that kids anywhere on Long Island had, whether it be public or private school. I didn't think the right answer was send your kid to private school. I thought the right answer was to take the time, invest the effort to try to grow what we've got here, and that's why I got involved. And I thought that I had some skills to help us save, to do that and to grow. And there were some issues going on at the time, you know, 3 years ago with regard to transparency, and we put in place programs to grow that. We audio record, which is like what we're doing now, but we audio record every board meeting. We make that available to you. I've also thought that we needed to better plan, and when I say better plan, I mean from a budget perspective so that people in the community could understand what their taxes are going to be like over the next year and the next 5 years, and we've hit those plans. We put in place a five-year plan, and we've hit them. I thought that we should better plan so that we could see where education was going and how we wanted to grow the district. So, for example, we could prioritize and allocate, prioritize the programs that we thought were great and have a long-term plan so that we didn't put a program in place that we could afford for 1 year, but when there were cuts next year because they were necessary, we have to pull that back, and we've done that. We've saved in the last 3 years significantly. We've used that savings to meet our goals, but also to grow. And if you've watched and seen what we've done in connection with the growth, we've added a science research program, which I'm extremely proud of. And it excites me. We sat in graduation last year and watched the students that were there. And I thought to myself, we really need to ensure that these students have the same exact, you know, benefits and programs. So we need to figure out how to get them to be able to compete in Siemens and Intel and these other programs. We put that in place this year. I'm extremely proud of that. We put in place an 811 program through the end of through 21. So I see my time is up, and I thank you very much. Please come out and vote for me, Joshua Foster. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to thank Kathleen and the Merchants Community Center. I'd like to also thank everybody in the audience. Again, it's very important that the community comes out to try to pick the best members for the Board of Education. Thank the other candidates that are up here. It's not mandatory to get on the ballot to come here, but everyone's here, so that's good to see. My name is Marcus Badgian, a 14-year resident of Center Mauritius. I grew up on Long Island. I went to Hopok Schools, and that's a much different school district than Center Mauritius. It gives me a different perspective. It's a district that had and still has an advantage that we may never see in Center Mauritius, and that's a very large industrial park that provides a commercial tax base and keeps property taxes low while still offering very good education. It's also a much larger district. My graduating class of almost 500 had students go to prestigious schools, Ivy League schools, U.S. Naval Academy. I myself was fortunate to take an early interest in science, and by the time I was in high school, I was lucky to have a very strong sense of direction. I was accepted to MIT, where I received my bachelor's degree in physics. I continued my education at Stony Brook. I got a master's degree there and met connections with people at Brookhaven Lab, and I was hired there shortly after graduation. I've been there for 23 years. I worked there with a small group of researchers studying using lasers to accelerate particles. I often work with students and researchers from across the country and around the world, students and people that have varying cultures and English language abilities. I think that's helped my ability to communicate. I also have two children in the district, Lillian in seventh grade and Alex in fifth grade. As my children have grown, I've naturally become more involved with the district. I regularly attend board meetings for several years to better understand how the district operates. I've served on committees for 3 years. I've been on the facilities and technology committees. I've also been able to attend some of the meetings of the curriculum committee. I've been on hiring interviews and worked for the past 2 years to help launch the middle school science quiz bowl club. So for me, running for the board is a way of giving back to the community, in a more comprehensive way. I believe my interactions with the board and administration thus far show that I have contributions to make. I feel I have the ability to work positively with just about everyone. I've had numerous one-on-one discussions with the administration and the superintendent, including the ability to express differences of opinion. And in closing, I believe our district should renew its focus on academic rigor and improved student outcomes for all students. I see room for improvement in both fiscal and curriculum sides of the district operation, and I look forward to sharing my abilities should I be elected to the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is George Maxwell. I do want to thank the PTA for putting this on, Kathleen for coming to moderate. And I do want to just take a moment to thank Annette Rank for her dedication to the children of the Santa Mauritius School District. It's much appreciated. I am a 21-year educator in Hicksville. I teach 6th grade English. I do have my degree in administration, but I chose to stay in the classroom because that's where the change is made. And I decided to run for the board because I think that we need to redirect our resources to what's going to be the greatest benefit for the children, and that's back into the classroom. I am an intermittent goer to the board meetings. Like many people, I live a busy life and have a busy schedule, so I do go when things are important to me. And over the winter, when I attended one of the board meetings, I decided that, you know what, I could stay on the sideline or I could throw my hat into the ring and I could try to make a positive change for the community. I do appreciate the steps that the current board has made, but there's ways that we can go further with clarity. There's ways that we can go further with our fiscal decisions and get the money again into the classrooms where it's going to benefit the children the most. I've been living in the community since 1996. Like many people, I think, I started at Pine Hills with my wife. And we loved it out here, so we stayed. We have 3 children that are currently in the district, one of whom is graduating this year. We have a sophomore daughter, and we have another one in the 6th grade. I never thought that I'd be able to speak about myself for 3 minutes. That card's coming awfully quick. I volunteered for many years in the Seahawks football organization as a coach. I volunteered in the MYO lacrosse organization, the boys, and I currently still sit on the board. At least until the current president is done with his term. And I just finished 4 years volunteering here at the high school with the varsity and JV lacrosse programs. So I have immersed myself in the community. And I hope you come out and vote, and I'd like to be able to make a positive change. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Danielle Lynch. I'm also running for a seat on the Santa Mauritius Board of Education. My husband and I became members of this community in 2002. We have 4 children who have gone through this district, ranging from 6th grade to since graduated last year. As a volunteer, I am currently a vice president of the PTA. Some of the things that I have done was the Fall Elementary Book Fair, the Glow Run, the Chinese Auction, the Woman and Duck Scene, just to name a few, with all the proceeds going back to fund various programs throughout our district. I've sat on the Facilities Committee, the Curriculum Committee, and the Legislative Committee. I've also sat on the Hiring Committee for 2 elementary teachers. I was part of the group that opposed the first bond that was out a few years ago. Professionally, I work with the Girl Scouts of Suffolk County as a director of volunteers throughout 12 different school districts in Suffolk. I've tried to incorporate some of those programs that I've learned from these districts into our PTA. I also work at Allen's Therapy. As part of my duties, I attend and report recommendations at IEP meetings and annual reviews at the request of school districts. In my quest to seek a position on the school board, I've been asking for copies of contracts and more clear breakdowns of our budget. I've sent them to George and Marcus as well. There are other districts that post contracts, salaries, better breakdowns of their budgets, detailed expense reports, all listed on their websites and available on their agendas. If you're unable to attend that meeting, the information is available for you to review and assess. I was criticized by some when I decided to run, suggesting that I don't need to have my hand in every cookie jar to make change, but I have to disagree. I'm a parent and a community member. Over the years, I've met people with kids in the district all in different phases and people who are retired without children in the district. I have sports kids, I have music kids, I have academic kids, I have struggling kids. I've seen this district from all different angles. The 5 members of the board are tasked with a very crucial and unique role in that they are representatives of our community. Every single member, be it law enforcement, firemen, teachers, parents, seniors, rocket scientists, and most importantly, the children. Whether you agree or disagree with whatever decisions are being made, it is the right of the community to be involved and the duty of a board member to ask questions that reflect all people within our community. The board is supposed to work with the district and not for the district. I ask a lot of questions, not to attack, but to learn. I have multiple stances on what our district needs to improve. Communication, accountability, balance of the board administration, ways to seek funding that doesn't impact the local taxpayer. Our needs are forever changing. But I'm willing to ask questions to find out the answers. Our current members have made progress. Presentations are great. They highlight what is good and what is working. But we also need to hear what isn't working. You can't fix things if you don't acknowledge that they are broken in the first place. After 15 years in this community, I feel that I can focus my commitment on being part of the process and solutions of the Santa Mauritius Board of Education. Thank you.
We're going to move on to questions, and I just like to remind you that you'll have 2 minutes or less to respond to each question. And since Lorianne started with the introductions, we'll move to Josh and continue down the line for each question. An individual school board member has no authority, only the board as a whole, to make decisions for the district. What skills or traits will allow you to effectively approach differences of opinion between board members?
So I completely agree. An individual school board member has no authority, and that's what you learn in basically day one. And the way that you need to then take that is, as a board, as a cohesive unit, you're able to make decisions to further the goals of the board. How do you have appropriate discourse? You have appropriate discourse in public meetings. If it's a topic that can be, you know, discussed in public, if it's a confidential topic, you have discourse in executive session. You need to be able to listen to everybody. You need to be able to work with people. In the last 3 years, we've had a variety of different people on the board, I think 8. And it takes a lot of patience, and it takes a lot of being able to listen to understand where people are coming from, what their goal is, as well as to be able to convey your ideas and where you think we should go. And at the same time, you need to be able to tie that back to the goals. So one of the things I think that I can bring to getting consensus and building consensus is that ability to really have people understand where people are going, where the rest of the board wants to go, if there is a difference, and understanding that it's okay if there is a difference of opinion, but we all have to be able to respect each other, discuss in a positive way. If you don't discuss in a positive way, we get nowhere, and I've seen that in the past in other situations. So I think it's that respect. It's being able to get everybody to respect each other, and I think that that's one of the skills that I brought to the board over the last 3 years. Thank you.
So to answer that question, obviously you need the ability to communicate with the other board members, right? So communication involves, first of all, listening. If you don't really listen to what the other board members are saying, try to understand their point of view and what they're trying to bring to the conversation, you're really going to miss out on a lot. Second part is expressing your opinion. So this goes to being clear about what your goals are, stating those clearly, stating them respectfully, not to attack other board members, but to make sure that your position is heard, and just keep the discourse going, moving that way. And I think along those lines, it's important to express your opinions because the board is a group of elected members that are representatives of the community. They're elected at different times and for different reasons. They appeal to different segments of the community, okay? So every board member brings with them a certain perspective that's important. And a board which basically is composed of 5 members that say the same thing is not an effective board. So that's why it's really important for everyone to get their unique perspective out. And at the same time, respect what the other opinions of the board members are, because, again, certain segments of the community are electing certain members to the board, and everybody's opinion counts equally on the board. And then when the time comes to make a decision, I think it is important to compromise, come to a consensus, and then once that decision is made, stick with it and act together. Again, not to whitewash everything and hide that there was any kind of disagreement, but just to move forward constructively so that progress is made.
I agree with both Josh and Marcus. It's really important to be a good listener, not just to wait for your turn to talk. You do need to be able to empathize with the other board members and find out what's important to them. so that you can get to the heart of the matter. I agree that it's a good idea to build a consensus when everybody is on the same page, but I also know that it's okay to disagree. And it's okay to disagree without being personal about it or taking it personal. You have to understand the job that's in front of you if you volunteer. And if you come out and you vote yes in the public, it should be because you believe in something and not just because you're compromising to move forward. To me, without disagreement, it's often difficult to get to the root of the matter. So that has to be something that you're willing to do, and you have to be willing to accept that that's going to happen. You do need to be respectful of everybody in the room and respectful of their opinions and not try to spend the time to convince them that you are right, but to understand where you can meet in the middle and where everybody can mesh. Thank you.
I agree with what everybody said. You have to listen to what people say, but you also have to be willing to state your own opinion, agree to disagree if that's necessary. I think that in the past, what I've done with the PTA with different things as far as organizing the Glow Run and other big events, the Chinese auction, I've relied on a lot of community members to help me pull it together because I didn't do it by myself. And I'm pretty good, I feel, in my opinion, at rallying people to support whatever cause that it is that I believe in. So I feel like that is one thing that I'm good at. I'm a recruiter. That's what I do as a living. So if there's some things that we're going to agree with, there's some things that we're going to disagree with. That's going to happen. But like George had mentioned and everybody else had mentioned, if you don't agree with the position, then that's okay too, because I did disagree with the original bond and I said that. But we also moved forward to create another bond that eventually passed. So thank you.
You know, obviously, as everybody said, being a good listener. I also believe being true to yourself is important. Getting all your facts together before you make a decision. I'm not a big fan of the gotcha moment, so I kind of like before we go ahead and make a decision that I have all of the facts straight. It is okay to disagree, but you know, you're not really dealing with. It's not something on a personal level. You have to decide what is best for the district. I think we've cohesively really we've made some really great decisions in the recent past, and there are some things that I don't agree with that I will consistently be a no on. But everyone kind of knows that, you know, my position is my position, but we can still move forward being an individual and having your own thoughts. Thank you.
Okay, describe specifically what you feel the best education looks like for a Santa Maria student. What are the areas you feel Santa Maria schools need to improve the most, and what are your plans to make these improvements a reality? Let's start with Marcus.
Okay, so the best education for every student is the one that prepares them for their future, academically, socially, athletics, extracurricular activities, anything that enhances their experience and provides them with a solid foundation for their future. And this goes for all students to different degrees, obviously, but it across the gamut from special ed students, majority of students that take interest in different subjects and different areas, students that have special abilities that excel. They should be challenged just as much as everyone else. So it's a varied education. There's no one recipe that fits all students. And I think at Santa Maria's, we do a good job to tailor our education to the students. Where I see room for improvement, I think we could challenge all of our students quite a bit more in terms of providing for educational enhancement activities. So, for instance, taking advantage of some more of the institutions we have locally on Long Island. I work at Brookhaven, so I could go into a whole number of things that are offered there as part of the lab's mission. They pay for most of that. It doesn't cost the district a whole lot. There are opportunities at the Stony Brook, Cold Spring Harbor Lab, Bay Street Theater, Stoller Center for the Performing Arts. There are things that our district could do that really wouldn't impact the budget that much. I think one thing I'd like to see specifically for education is moving languages other than English earlier into elementary school. And I think the IB diploma program is something that could be accelerated. We should move as quickly as possible to implement that in the high school. And I think behavioral programs could be implemented, which would make the most of the students' time in the classroom.
I think the ideal education is one that speaks to the child's academic, social, and emotional growth. You need to understand that every child has a gift, but if you teach a fish to climb a tree, they're not going to feel that way. So you have to get to what they're best at, and you have to help them realize that. I would like to see languages earlier. I would like to see the accelerated program. I'd like to see technology embedded in the classroom, because that is the wave of the future. Education is changing. It's a Google world now. We are not the providers of information anymore. It is our job to help the children interact with it. So we need to get devices in the classroom so that they can learn to collaborate and collaborate on a world scale, because that's where the classroom is going. And I do believe that we are behind in that. If you engage them socially, if you engage them academically, and if you engage them emotionally, then the behavior part will take care of itself. An engaged student is one that is connected to the community of education, in the classroom, outside the classroom, after school, wherever their talent lies. That's all I got.
Okay. I think that there's no one specific fit. Ideally, it would be perfect if every kid had an individual education plan that promotes their strengths, teaches them how to persevere through their weaknesses. I think that we do need to focus on the language. I think that we should be implementing it at an earlier age. There are other districts that are doing it as early as kindergarten, and I feel like we can do that here. I feel like we need to have our children motivated intrinsically, as opposed to for their behavior, to motivate themselves to do better. I think that a lot of things in this district, as far as the discipline and the behavior, needs to be, I would say, addressed. That would help more of their education as well. And I don't know what else. I would like to focus on music, art. I feel like that is represented equally in the school district. It's pretty limited, and I think that we can do better with that as well. And as Marcus had said, there's a lot of great programs that are available that are OCS eatable in Stony Brook. Brookhaven Lab, which is our neighboring, is right in our backyard. There's a lot of different opportunities that these kids could utilize that probably would not impact financially the district.
We kind of talk a lot about the education being right-sized, that we make sure that each child gets what they need. I think we do a pretty good job. I think our 811 program that is now full day is one of the things that has really helped out. I think I would like to see more advanced placement and Excelsior classes for our high school students. I'm very excited about the MYP and the IB program. I think once we get it implemented, it's going to knock it out of the park for our kids. Our smart schools money has come through. We will be improving our technology. We've got our Google, we'll be a Google school pretty soon. We've got some tablets on carts, and we'll have building-wide Wi-Fi finally, I think that'll help out. I think we need to work on our guidance department. I think we really need to have our kids know where they're going after school, such as college or career, sooner. That's something we've tried to push really hard. I also agree that we should start language earlier. And I agree, too, that our music and arts program, we could probably improve. Thank you.
So I think that everything that everybody said is in line with my thoughts. I think if you look at what's the best education for our kids, it's different for every single kid. And, to Danielle's point, if every kid had their own specific educational path, it would be phenomenal. I think that it's a key for us is to ensure that the kids are college and career ready when they ultimately leave, and that starts in kindergarten or starts before kindergarten. If we can have pre-K programs that help in reading and math. Specific areas that I think we could grow, as somebody said, ENL, earlier language other than English earlier, we can increase our offerings throughout, whether it be arts or elective offerings. And then specifically to grow guidance, I think that, we've looked very, very hard over the last 2 years at our guidance and kind of looked at what's best in class in other districts, and we've had guidance come in a number of times to present. I'm frankly excited by kind of the path that we're going on, whether it be, you know, additional programs here at the school or college trips to see other things, and then I know that Marcus said it as well, but to accelerate the MYP program, you know, which is the middle school international baccalaureate program, to accelerate our candidacy at the high school for the IB program, things that will help our kids in a global environment kind of think outside the box, tie education in kind of horizontally from subject matter to subject matter. Not that we're not doing it today, but I think that this kind of forms a more cohesive curriculum plan, and seeing the teachers come in and explain the trainings that they've had and the classes that they've seen really excites me. It makes me feel like, because they're excited, they're going to excel, they're going to push. So I think that getting MYP done, which, you know, is hopefully the next couple of years, getting IB implemented, and then looking at a principal year's programming so you have that ground-up kind of curriculum that will teach every kid and help drive it across the entire spectrum of subject matter is exciting. Thank you.
It appears that 2 elementary teachers will be cut next school year. How would you justify the removal of elementary services year after year while the number of administrative positions stays the same? And what would be your plans, if any, for adding future support to our elementary school? Let's start with George.
I might use the first minute just to think. A little tougher to go first, I guess. So I don't know that I could justify cutting teachers. I know the board did it at the previous budget meeting by enrollments gone down in the elementary school. I know that's how they justified it. I think we're kind of top-heavy with where we spend our money on staffing, and I think that needs to change so we can get the money back into the classroom. I would want to add teachers. I would want to reduce class sizes. I would want to get a teacher in there that can teach them to get iPads or Chromebooks or what have you into the hands of kindergartners. And bring that up through the grades as we move along. I'm going to tell you, I'm struggling because I can't justify cutting teachers. I don't know how you can justify cutting teachers when the money is going to administrators. And I do think that under the constraints that we have, we need to add administrators. We need to add 2 people that can be director of humanities and somebody who can be director of the sciences and the math, somebody to drive curriculum. And they don't need to be full-time administrators. They can be the experts that are in the building now who can teach 3 classes and they can supervise that in the middle school and in the high school. Because Ms. Ngoli is one person, and it's very difficult to tie curriculum together and make those changes on your own. And it's very difficult for the teachers to do it on their own. And I'm telling you this from experience. I have a director of English, and he brings the stuff to us. And then it's our job to create it and bring it into the classroom and challenge the children. And I think that's an area that we need to add under the budgets that we have and the fiscal constraints that are a reality today. But I can never, ever justify taking teachers and good teachers away from children.
I agree with George. I don't think that we should be getting rid of teachers when we have in our school district, we have 10.5 administrators in our small district as it is. I feel like that as far as getting more money and funding into the school district, our previous administrator that has since left, I think it's John Allen, in his contract, he was supposed to write grants for the school district. So I think that that's one of the things that we also need to explore with our current administrators or whoever is in our district that's available to do that, because I think that's where we're going to get our money. Also, as far as getting more money into the school district, I found out when through the PTA, if we contract through BOCES, 60% of our 60% of the budget will be 60% of the money will be reimbursed into our budget for the following year. So that's the only other way we're going to be able to build programs. There's arts and education. There's all different types of programs that you can go through BOCES. I think that's another way to add to our schools without impacting us financially. Thank you.
I hate it. I'm not happy we have to cut two teachers. How do you justify it? Enrollment is down. How do you justify enrollment being down? Our family's not moving here with small kids. Why? It's kind of a big picture ripple effect. If your homes are not selling to people with small kids, we don't have kids coming into the district. You know, when enrollment goes down, that's where it has to go. I hate that it's from the elementary school. I constantly feel like we're putting a new roof on the house while the basement's filling with water. What do you do? How do you justify? I don't know. You know, I don't think we have enough administrators here. I think we need help, especially at the secondary campus. It's the dirty word. It's money.
So nobody likes to cut anybody, and I think that when you look at the number of students, as Laura said, you know, the enrollment that we're looking at in two specific sections, two specific grade levels, 16 kids in the class, you have that balance of whether, you know, while that would be phenomenal, whether the alternative cut of programs in other places would be problematic. So we make that decision in every single budget cycle and every decision that we make. Where do you want to spend? Where do you have to spend? How can you spend? We've gotten class sizes down in many different places, and we have to make a determination as to whether we want to have very small classes in those two sections, or we want to be able to continue to grow and provide offerings in other places. I would say that if you look over the last 3 years, the number of administrators is not constant. The number of administrators is down significantly, and when you look at it from a dollars perspective, and we've talked about that before, we consolidated athletic director and the high school AP position, which resulted in significant savings over 5 years. We and Danielle spoke about John Allen's position. That position is no longer, and we've reallocated those services. So we absolutely do need to look, and we have looked at how to do that, but it's that balance that's constant. Nobody likes to do it, but on the same token, if we're able to provide the same education and services to our kids but continue to provide other offerings, you know, we do that. On the administrative side, one other thing that we did was we renegotiated contracts, and we got them to have very small increases over the term of the contract with regard to certain administrators. We also had significant contributions for new hires of administrators to their health. And if you've looked at the budget, you've been at the budget meetings over the last, you know, 3 months, the number one biggest increase that we've seen is the cost of health insurance going up. So being able to get that greater contribution from at least new administrators, and you have to start somewhere, has really helped the district, or will really help the district in the next number of years. Thank you.
So regarding the two positions that were eliminated, actually was a little bit surprising to me. Actually, I'm all the board meetings, and I remember there being discussion of teacher retirements and some turnover that way. But it seems like that came, positions being eliminated came up last minute. I guess once the enrollment numbers were in hand, maybe that's what forced it. And I think, right, so you can't really justify it. As Josh said, it would be great to have 16 students in a classroom, but that's probably not realistic when you've got other grades with much bigger enrollment. So you do have to have some balance there. I think, you know, there are still ways to address this by trying to trim the budget wherever possible. I mean, look, on the flip side of things, you've got something like 10th period in the middle school, which is basically paying a whole grade worth of teachers to watch kids do homework and play on their phones. I don't think anybody would say that that's a good use of money. And so that's a contractual issue that I think has to be worked on as soon as possible. That'll bring in a little money. You can also squeeze here and there. I mean, basically what you need to look at is every budget item. Is it not just a value for what you're spending, what you're getting, but is it really going to the core values of the district? Is it really something that we should be spending money on that's going to improve the education of our students, not just because it was in the budget last year? So I think, you know, try to relieve some of the budgetary pressure that way and try to maintain staffing. I think that would go a long way to addressing some of these issues. And I think basically it's whatever everyone else is saying. You can't justify it, but you do what you can to mitigate the impact of it.
substance abuse is epidemic in Suffolk County and on Long Island. What do you see as the school district's role in substance abuse prevention? And would you support implementing a school-wide K-12 evidence-based prevention program to educate our students? Let's start with Danielle.
Okay. I agree that it is an epidemic. I think that the school needs to play a big role in it. I know that we do have the police officer push in, and we do have sometimes in Richards Bay in the know has come in and done some programs, but I think it needs to be ongoing. It should be part of their curriculum because it's something that's happening to the athlete, it's happening to every kid in this community. It's everywhere. I feel like it needs to be addressed all the time. I don't really know what else to say about it, but I think that we should implement programs for it. So thank you.
I do agree that it is a problem. It seems to be in the news every day. I think we do need some type of all-level K-12 prevention program. We do have our SRO. I think we should add it to our health class curriculum. I think our nurse should have information. I think also we should look at like our athletes and their injuries and what type of pain medication they're being given, because that's where it kind of starts. I also think that it starts at home, and as long as we tell our kids and that we know the consequences of what happens, that hopefully we could put a stop to it.
So, for me personally, it's the number one thing that scares me the most about raising kids, and you can control certain things and you can teach, but you can't be with them every second, and it just terrifies me. As parents, we don't all know every single thing that's going on, and I think our role, from a district perspective, is to educate as much as we possibly can. It's to talk about it. It's to get parents comfortable talking about it. It's to get kids to understand where their lives go. So we sat, and we saw the presentation a month ago. I think that's a first step. I think that we need to have officers in the classroom talking more. I think we need to show kids what happens when you just try something, how you can get to it. Because once it's kind of out of your hands and out of the control, the ramifications are devastating. I would fully support a K-12, program to educate our kids and to help fight this. And I think that, because we as parents don't know everything that's going on, we don't have access to all of the programs, I think it's the district's job to step up and do more on a regular basis.
Okay, I'm actually not familiar with this evidence-based program that the question refers to, but in principle, anything that's going to help the kids better understand what's facing them in the future regarding drugs can be a good thing. And I think the district does a lot already. We heard Danielle mention that the police come to our schools on a regular basis, which is a great thing. When I went to school, you didn't talk to the police, right? So if you have a rapport with them, it's basically just going to help them do their job. It's going to help keep the kids out of trouble. So that's a great thing. I think when you talk about this, it tends to be an issue that people don't really want to hear about. And I'm a little bit surprised, because I can go to the newspaper and I can see when a house was broken into on our street in town, but I have honestly no clue what's happening in our school with regards to crime and drugs. I know it happens, but we don't seem to make anyone aware of it. And I think that could be something in terms of transparency and openness between the board and administration and the community. That should be something that somehow we discuss. I'm not saying we need to mail it out every time something happens, but at least so that there's an awareness among the community what's going on in our school. So that probably would be something that I would advocate for. And then basically try to continue to make sure that all of our students are exposed to the information they need.
I fully support an early intervention program. Special assemblies are great. To get the police in here to talk to the children are great, but it needs to be embedded in the curriculum starting in the elementary school, so their exposure to drug prevention and the things that it can do to you and your life and your family is talked about regularly at an early age. while they are developing their habits, and not when they've already developed them or they're on their way to developing them. I also think that we could use a parent education center, a place for parents to go and find out themselves if they're struggling on how to have these conversations with their children. The best way to bring it up.
In your opinion, is the current administration doing a good job for our schools? Also, with regard to any relationships you've had in the past with Center Merchants administrators, how will you go forward in a transparent way to show loyalty to the taxpayers and not that you are for or against any particular administrator? Let's start with Lori.
Can you just read it one more time?
Yes.
Thank you.
In your opinion, is the current administration doing a good job for our schools? Also, with regard to any relationships you've had in the past with Center Merchants administrators, how will you go forward in a transparent way to show loyalty to the taxpayers and not that you are for or against any particular administrator?
Since being on the board, I believe that I have a very good relationship with our administration. All of them seem to have an open door policy. I can go in, ask whatever question that I want. I get a straight answer. There's no runaround. I believe that they are being completely transparent, and I try and relay as much information as I can with the same amount of transparency. We're all both parents and taxpayers. So it's important that we understand those that don't have kids in the district feel a little differently about the tax rate than those that do have kids in the district. And basically what you really want to do is you just want to have to, make good decisions for the legacy of the property owners, whether they want to be here forever or they want to sell and cash out. I think we do a really good job with the last 3 years. The budget has been under the tax cap. So I think that we understand the needs of every stakeholder in Santa Maria.
So, I think before you get involved and you're on the board and you get to see kind of everything, it's easy to throw stones, and I certainly did. And you get here and you learn a little bit about kind of what happens each day and why kind of decisions are made, sometimes on a confidential basis, that we can't be completely transparent about for a variety of laws. So for a variety of reasons based on law. In answer to your question, I think now knowing what I know, on the whole, I think administration is doing a good job. Could they do a better job? Absolutely. And if you come to meetings, you can see where I push and how I push and how I think that they should be pushing in different directions. So we can always do better. With regard to whether relationships with different administrators come into play, I would say, and how do you show your loyalty to the taxpayers? I would say that, yes, I can do that, and here's an example. We recently had a very difficult discussion, negotiation with the administrators union. With regard to, a variety of issues, and one of the, we had a significant disagreement, but I think as professionals, you understand that we each have a position that we're pushing for valid reasons, whether it be a union position or a district position to ensure the fiscal responsibility of the district. And you need to be able to come to a consensus, a decision with that administrator or that union, document it, and move forward in a positive way. And if you can't do that, I don't think we have anything. And we've been very successful in doing that. I think in building the morale between administrators, between teachers, and hopefully between community and teachers and administrators. Thank you.
So in answer to the first part of the question regarding is administration doing a good job for our district, I'm not going to say yes or no. Basically, what the administration is doing is under the direction of the Board of Ed. I don't see an issue, or at least I'm not aware of an issue, where the board has directed an administrator to take some initiative or take some action, and the administrator says no and does not heed the wishes of the board. Obviously, there are subtleties there, but basically, the board really is the group responsible for setting the direction of the district. The administrators work out the details and do all the hard work, let's say. But I wouldn't say I see any major issue where I can point the finger only at an administrator and leave everybody else off the hook. In terms of our administrators, I've dealt with just about all of them in some capacity, informal discussions, or just trying to get information, or pushing for some initiative within the schools. And my basic experience has been that they're fairly responsive, right? I mean, I'm not a board member. I've been a community member up until now, and they've been very open and very responsive to my requests. In terms of what can we do as board members to foster confidence or impartiality, given an impression of impartiality to the community, it comes back to openness. One thing that I'd like to see, Daniel said, the contracts in the district are available. You have to go and ask for them. So on the one hand, it's clear why you want to keep your cards close to your chest, right? If you put it out there, people are going to ask questions, and some people are going to be upset. So you don't want to do that. But I think on the flip side, you're hurting yourself because the community is going to turn around and say, why did you put this stuff out there? What are you trying to hide? So I think going back to the openness, we can improve on that.
I can't give you an absolute. I can tell you that there's been times where certain building level administrators have made positive impacts on my children, and I applaud them for that. But if you go above that level, I can tell you the reason that I'm sitting here is I think that we have things a little bit backwards. I think that the impression that I have is that central office administration believes the board works for them, and it's the other way around. They work for us. How do I stay loyal to the taxpayers? I take your money, which is my money, and I make sure that I make the best decision for the children in the community, not the adults. So I can't sit up here and tell you yes or no. I'm not in the boardroom. I'm not in executive session. I know in dealings with some of the administrators, they have not been honest with me. They have not given me absolute clarity, and they have not been transparent. But I'm also smart enough to know that the moment doesn't make the person. So if you ask me for an absolute yes or no, I cannot give you one. But I know that things need to improve and things need to change.
I agree. I think that I can't give a specific answer, but I do know in an effort to save the district money, one of the things that our board has done is combine some roles for some of the administrators. And I think some of the roles that were combined was a little too much for some of them to handle. I think in this instance, you kind of get what you pay for. For instance, I will give an example for me that I've had to deal with twice in 2 years. There was a school play going on at the same time there was a soccer tournament. So I don't understand, and that was one specific person that was responsible for doing that as an administrator. As far as loyalty to the taxpayers, again, I'm trying to make the best decisions that I think that would, you know, be good for people, the taxpayers, and myself in this community. And if I disagree with something that is able to be, that I will disagree with it publicly. I won't do it in executive session if I was on the board, because I feel like the most powerful thing you can do is express your views as a board member publicly. And as far as anything in terms of communicating with the administration, I want everything in writing, because I want that as a reference for me to refer back to, because sometimes I make mistakes. I don't want a verbal response. I want an action. I want an action plan, and I want it in writing. That's how we move forward. So we know if it works, if it doesn't work, and then we can reevaluate and move forward. Thank you.
In a time when many bargaining units are working to keep Long Island school districts' costs down by agreeing to salary freezes or giving up salary steps, do you support extending the administrator's contract before it comes due for renegotiation? Also, do you feel taxpayers should be made aware prior to the budget vote of any raises or bonuses given to or promised to any administrators? Let's start with Josh.
extension early. Again, before I was on the board, I said that this was a crazy thing to do. Why would you ever extend early? And there are instances where it does make sense to extend early. There's a net positive to the district. If you can save money for the district through perhaps a reduction in steps or a reduction in an annual increase or a health insurance, a greater contribution for health insurance. I'll give you an example. You know, four of the five bargaining units that we've got in this district, we've renegotiated over the last 3 years. Not all of them early. Frankly, I think only one early, and there was a specific reason for that. But in that particular case, the benefit that we got saved significantly over a period of time. Meaning, you know, and it's all public, but the administrator's contract, as I said before, we were able to extend it for a period of time, but we've also got 32% contribution for new hires in administration for health. So that's huge. So again, initially I thought not a great idea to extend early, but there are financial reasons that you may decide to do that. With regard to bonuses or budget votes or raises, not certain exactly what that question pertains to, but certainly every contractual agreement is public, is foilable, and what I've tried to do to drive transparency is anytime we've done that, and you can go back and listen to the audio, anytime we've entered into a contract, I've tried to explain it in kind of just a short summary at the beginning of the meeting, why we're not every single contract in the week, we sign, you know, 5, 10, 15 contracts every other week, but If it's an employment contract or administrator's contract, they try to explain what we've done, how we've done it, why we've done it, and the cost or savings to the district. Thank you.
So I guess similar to what Josh is saying, you know, I think the question is sort of implying that anytime you negotiate early, you're somehow giving away money out of the district. I mean, I don't, as far as I can see, that's not the case. Definitely, the items he cited, if you can negotiate something which is beneficial to the district and both sides agree to that, why not do it early? It saves money. If it's not a money-saving issue, then maybe there's some other reason to do it, but obviously then it's not as useful. In terms of what you can do to advertise these things, I just said it. A lot of districts post these things online. And again, if I can go and I can submit a request, get the information, and everybody in the district can do that, why make people jump through hoops? Why not have it available so people can look at it? And then if you read through these things, you'll actually see what's going on. You see a history of what was negotiated when, and it just clarifies everything. And so, you know, that's one of the things that really has a lot of room for improvement in our district.
Kathleen, can I just ask you to clarify that first part again? Was this contracts, like tri-borough contracts with teachers or superintendent's contracts? Does it say specifically?
No.
Okay. So, again, I'm...
Administrators.
Administrator contracts, right? So if you're working on a contract that's outside of tri-borough, then the answer is no. Why would I give up that fiscal prudence, that fiscal responsibility, where I can evaluate when we're closer to the end? Why do I have to extend you now? The answer is no, I would not extend it. If we're talking about a teacher's contract that really does not necessarily ever expire, but there comes a time when you renegotiate, well, we have a business administrator, and I would want projections. I'd want to know where the economy was going. I'd want to know if we could anticipate some state aid and an uptick in state aid. And then I would want, and then based on that information, if it was fiscally prudent for the district and it worked for the teachers as well, and that's important because the happy teachers make for happy children. And I'm not saying we give the store away because we have a responsibility, but we do want the people that are going to be affecting our children on a daily basis to feel like they've been treated fairly and equitably. So in that regard, then I would say yes. But I certainly would not renegotiate or extend a contract that had a limited term before that contract was getting set to expire. I think that's fiscally irresponsible.
I agree. I would not extend the contract, knowing I don't know what it would, and what the terms are, but unless I knew the terms, but I don't see how it could be fiscally responsible extending a contract on an administrator. I don't understand how it would save the district money. As far as making the public aware when you're doing a budget, as far and the contract extension, or if you're giving a raise or whatever, definitely, you should definitely let the public be made aware. Because anytime I was trying to get any information before this Meet the Candidates night, just anything, it could take up to 20 days. I don't think we should have to jump through hoops as community members, as taxpayers, to get information, to make our own judgments and clarify our own situations. So I think everything should be made public. That's within the legal ramifications of it. Thank you.
As far as looking for asking for pay freezes, I would rather see us look for other places to save before I went to whether it be teachers or paraprofessionals or anyone else with a contract to ask for a pay freeze. They do most of the legwork around here. They deserve to be paid the most. As far as renegotiating administrative contracts, I think you have to look at the individual and what they're doing. I believe it should be on a case-by-case basis. Like Josh said, we did renegotiate with 4 out of the 5 bargaining units with our health benefits, which I think saves us a lot, especially now and in the long run. I don't agree that everything should be made public. I believe that some of that stuff should be, left. It shouldn't, you wouldn't want your salary out in public. You wouldn't want what you do for a living out in the open. If someone wants it and it's available, they can ask for it. But I think sometimes having that information out in the public is a little reckless. Thank you.
Many taxpayers are concerned about fiscal responsibility. As a cost-cutting measure, would you support combining the middle school and high school under one set of administrators? Let's start with Marcus.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to go first, isn't it?
Better use it.
I think that maybe in more extreme circumstances it might be warranted, but from what I've looked at in terms of administrative overhead, personnel, and salaries, I don't see Central Riches being an outlier. We're definitely not at the top, we're not at the bottom, we're a small district. And so in terms of consolidating administration, we really don't see a lot of room for that. If we were really in some kind of fiscal crunch, then you do what you have to do. Off the top of my head, I don't really see a big justification for that. And there are plenty of things our administrators could be doing. We definitely can have them trying to improve the curriculum, support the teaching staff, do whatever needs to be done to support the academic rigor that we need in this community, in the school district. So, again, off the top of my head, I don't see that that's really an important issue. There are other approaches to try to save funds, to save money. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a couple of issues. We've got right now a capital project that's being rolled out, and we are adding debt to the district. Any interest on that debt? To my mind, we're not getting a lot for that interest. Basically, it gives us a little flexibility, but look, in a district like this, you've got buildings, roofs are going to need to be replaced. You're going to be spending in the future for capital projects. I'd like to see us start a capital reserve fund because we know we're going to need the money. I'd like to see that started up and stop paying interest. It doesn't add up to a whole lot. It's probably $250,000, $500,000 per year, depending on which year you look at, but that's one thing right now that we can save money.
If by consolidating we're talking about eliminating positions, then I would say no. You got to maintain a certain ratio. If by consolidating you mean go with one principal and then pay other assistant principal pay, then I would probably say yes. But I don't... to reduce the number of adults that have positive interactions with the children on a daily basis makes no sense to me. It's at the higher levels where we need to restrain ourselves fiscally and redirect that money. It's not on the building level. We have one administrator in the middle school for over 300 children, and I would not want to reduce that ratio. So I'm going to say no. I would not want to consolidate them. I would find other ways to save money, and I would find ways to reallocate the monies that we have.
I'm torn between yes and no for this answer, because I went to a school back a long time ago. When it was 7 through 12, we had one principal and two assistant principals in the middle school and the high school. Obviously, it's a different time that we're raising our kids. But I do feel like we have to figure something out that's a better balance than what's been working with our current administration. Like George had said, we have one middle school principal. I don't think that necessarily adding to that would be a good solution, but we could reconfigure what we do have of the administrators that we have, maybe bring somebody over to help as an assistant dean or something for the middle school. And I think we need to also incorporate chairs of departments. I feel like we don't have them anymore. We don't have a science chair. We don't have a social studies chair. We don't have an art chair. I don't understand why we lost all of that in the teachers that are in the classroom and brought it all up to the administration, because I feel like that's too much of a responsibility on them to do the curriculum, to do all of the other stuff, to maintain their buildings, maintain the students, and I think we are tasking them too much, and I don't know, so I'm torn. So thank you.
I would be against combining the middle school and high school administrators. I believe that they're a different animal. Middle school children, I don't like them interacting with our high school kids in any way, shape, or form, and I wouldn't want any type of administrator sharing. I would like to see possibly a dean of discipline at the secondary campus, grades 6 through 12, basically their own office taking care of all the discipline, because I think that's a position that we're lacking. Yeah, that's really it.
So I agree. I don't think that consolidation of the two buildings would make sense. 3 years ago, it was my view that we really needed a lot of focus at the middle school, and that was the reason why. And I think that the middle school has, we've grown significantly there in the last 3 years. But I still think you need that focus. I think that's a tough age for kids. I think that combining and losing that level of focus would be really detrimental at a developmental time. And while it would be great to have chairs, we do have a science chair, but while it would be great to have chairs throughout and take some of these duties from administrators so they can focus in other areas, it's a very expensive benefit to have, and that was why, you know, a number of years ago, that was cut. So while it seems like maybe there's a little hanging fruit, I think at the end of the day, if you truly consolidate it, you may be looking at one administrator, you know, position. I agree with what Lorianne said. We need to figure out ways to do better with discipline. I'm not certain that I agree that, you know, a position can be put in right now from a financial perspective to address solely discipline there. So I think we need to be a bit more creative about how we do that, how we pay for it, so how we get better discipline follow through with the resources that we've got. But in summary, no, I don't think that consolidation is the right answer.
In an era of limited financial resources, how will you engage and enlist budget support from conservative voters with no children in the public schools? How can board members prove themselves accountable to those community members and represent all community members fairly?
Can we start with Marcus?
Sorry.
That's a tough thing, right, to ask people to dig into their pockets when they don't have any children in the school district. But the bottom line is a healthy school district and a high-performing school district leads to a healthier community, raises property values, invites people to come here and contribute to our community, to live here and buy our homes, open businesses here. So that's how I would hold myself responsible for the people that don't have children in the district, that it's not just about a healthy school, it's about a healthy community, and that we need your support to make this a healthy community.
I agree with George. school district, a good school district is linked to home values. You bring more people in, you create more revenue, you create more businesses. If you have more families that are coming in because of the school district, you're just going to give back to the community and everybody that's in the community as far as residents, taxes, businesses. So we do need to improve our schools to improve our community to have give back to everybody that lives in it, including the children that are people that don't have children in the district. Thank you.
I think we all kind of feel the same way about here. You know, Main Street is like a desolate wasteland, and we're going to be a drive-through town pretty soon. And, you know, you look at the number of houses in this town that are in foreclosure or in pre-foreclosure, and I know Mr. Maxwell's wife is a realtor, so, you know, she's got the hardest job right now because I don't really know how you could sell a house in this town. And, you know, when your property value goes down, you're not going to have young families come here. And, you know, with a school district that isn't performing well, it's, again, like I said, a cyclical ripple effect. I think it requires everyone's support of the school district and, you know, our community to try and get us where we need to be, that people want to come here.
So it's funny, I had this conversation with someone who, you know, we were talking about the budget, said to me, so, you know, I would rather see a 2% reduction than a 2% increase. You guys think you're doing a great job because you're keeping it at the 2% for the last number of years. And my response was, I don't know that you would. I think you'd like to see us be as careful as possible and walk that balance. I think you'd like to see us, you know, not drive taxes through the roof because you're not going to be able to sell your house, but also not drive education through the floor because you're not going to be able to sell your house. I think it's kind of in line with what everybody said here. We have to find that balance. And the way that you communicate to those who don't have kids in the district is, if we don't have the best district that we can have, if we don't have a stellar district, people aren't going to want to move in, not going to drive up those housing prices. So while it hurts a bit to have slight increases each year, if we're growing the district, which I believe we've done over the last number of years, if you look at graduation rates, advanced regents rates, and our regents scores, you know, we're doing our job. We're growing the district. The dollars are being managed as best we can, and we're getting there. And I would say to that person without kids, take a look at what we've done from a contractual savings perspective over the last 3 years. If you look at whether it be the bus contract that we renegotiated, and we pushed to do an request for quotes, thank you. Or as I said before, the contracts with the unions as well as with the other groups and the other service providers, we saved. And this is rough numbers, and I kind of put this together by listening back to the audio and the explanations I had. Approximately $4 million over the next 5 years with the contractual actions that we've done. And if you blow those out further over the next 10 years, the number goes up to $6 million. So that's how I would kind of say to that person without kids, let's grow the district the best we can in a fiscally reasonable manner. Thank you.
So I mean, we seem to hear this quite a bit, that somehow you don't have kids in the district, that you don't want to pay to educate them. And basically, the community needs to educate its kids, right? It's to everyone's benefit. I mean, the kids of the next generation, they're the ones that are going to be running this world, taking care of us, dealing with the rest of the world, right? So I think everybody understands that. Sure, there are going to be people that feel differently. I think for the most part, people understand that it's not whether or not you have a kid in school that you want taxes to go up. It doesn't work that way. And I want to relate a story. Somebody came to me not too long ago to talk about school district, and they said it very nicely. I hadn't heard it said this way before. They said, this community has always been very generous in meeting the responsibility of educating our children. And it's true, it is a responsibility, and the community has been generous, right? Through the years, I don't think that many budgets have been voted down. And probably the worst thing that you can do is give the community a reason to think that you're betraying that commitment and that generosity. So coming back to how do you actually convince the community that you're doing the best you can, you basically have to work really hard trim the budget. Again, make people aware of what's happening, transparency, openness. One thing that I would really advocate for to improve the rigor, the academic rigor, and show people that we're trying to get the best education for our students, I would have panel formed, or at least try to convince the other board members this is worthwhile. Form a panel, look at other districts around us, our peers, high-performing districts, and see what they're doing that we could be doing. And, in that way, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're looking at what other districts are doing and try to really get the best bang for the buck.
I think I went around.
Lack of discipline continues to disrupt classroom learning and create an uncomfortable environment for many students. Do you have any new ideas to help reduce discipline problems? And we'll start with Danielle.
I think that discipline and needs to be incorporated into the curriculum in every level. As far as it should be spoken about in a regular basis, not just in a one-stop shop assembly. I think that it has to be taught every day. As far as dealing with the complaints and the bullying in the school district, I feel like there's a lot of stuff that's not addressed evenly in the school district as far as discipline issues. There's some kids that specifically will get a verbal or a written response of a written reprimand, and some kids don't get anything and they can be part of the same thing. I feel like there's no rhyme or reason to how they discipline the kids in the school district. I feel like everything should be in writing as far as if for whatever happens to any of the kids. If there's four kids involved and one kid's getting a letter, there's something wrong. Everybody needs to be notified. Everybody needs to be on the same page. And I think we need to acknowledge that there is a big discipline issue in middle school in particular, and not try and sugarcoat it, because it is a problem. So, I mean, I don't have all of the answers, but I think that it needs to be addressed, it needs to be acknowledged, it needs to be recognized, and it needs to be, they need to come up with a plan. So, I don't know. Thank you.
I think a lot of it goes back to the code of conduct. I think all of our students should read it and know where it is. I think the parents should read it and know where it is. A lot of the teachers, I've heard from some teachers say there's a huge discipline issue, and then there are some teachers that say it's really not that big of a deal. I think what happens a lot of times is that people say, not my student, not my problem, and I think that's where we're kind of lacking. Anyone who has any type of authority in the district, in the building, if you see something, say something. Even if you don't know who the kid is, it's your responsibility as a teacher to handle it firsthand, and I think that's where sometimes things fall by the wayside. I do think that we have issues with help and trying to get the referrals back to the administrators when there is a problem with discipline. It's something that we've talked about and something that we really have to work on. But I do agree, with Danielle said that, different students get different reprimands, and I think that we really need to be cohesive following the code of conduct to the letter to make sure every incident is handled in the proper way.
So I think you'd always do better. We instituted meet and greets this year where, different members of the board went to each of the buildings and spoke to the teachers to kind of get the feeling of what's going on, because I think sometimes you hear discipline is crazy from certain groups, and other times you hear, well, everything's fine, and we said, our job is to kind of figure this out, let us go and understand what the issues are. And one of the things that we heard was we need to do better on discipline. And I think that, new ideas, I think that it's key that we drive accountability to the teachers to when they see something, as Lorianne said, say something. And it takes time. If you see something, you have to go with a referral, you have to call home, you have to have that conversation with the parent and push because you're the person that saw something. I think we need to be, in every instance, frankly, more strict and directly aligned with the code of conduct. You have a code, you have a set of school laws for a reason. Kids need to know
what will happen if they break those rules, and we need to follow through very clearly. It takes more work. It's more work for teachers. It's more work for the administrators to do. But then the last piece that we need is we need parents to stand behind that. And we need parents to understand that without discipline across the board, the school district can't do what it's intended to do. It can't educate. If people are running wild, it can't educate. So we need that full bottom-up support. Parents, teachers, and then we need the kids to understand that we will not accept anything but, you know, following of our code of conduct.
So I alluded to this a little bit before, behavioral issues, and I definitely don't have the feeling that we have an extraordinarily bad behavioral problem at Center Riches. I could be wrong, but I think there is room for improvement, right? It's disruptive. We're paying teachers, teach our students. When there's a disruption, we're wasting time, we're wasting money. So for that reason, you need to focus on this. I'm aware of programs out there that address this. Somebody may be aware of a program called PBIS, Positive Behavior Reinforcement Support, something like this. So what they've seen is this program allows kids to identify themselves when their behavior is turning. It gives them mechanisms to deal with that. And the end result has been not only has behavior improved, but academic performance has improved. So I don't want to tout this one program as a cure-all, but I think that's an example of something that we can do to address this issue. Another thing, you know, like Josh said, if you have a code of conduct, you need to decide if that's really what you want. And if it is, then you need to follow it. Case in point, cell phone policy. If you're going to have a policy that says no cell phones in the classroom, you can't have everyone ignoring it. It doesn't work. It sends a signal not about how to use a cell phone in the modern world. It sends a signal also about how do you ignore the rules, which is not what we want to teach. Along those lines, that's something that takes more work. And basically, if the board sets this as a priority, then I think there is room to address the issue.
First, you need to start by understanding that children want parameters, but you also have to know that they're going to test them. You need to set fair expectations. They need to be clear. They need to be communicated to the student. You can't just tell them you need to do this and that is it. They are old enough, they understand, and they want a reason. And it's okay to give them a reason. And then you need to consistently enforce the consequences that come if they fail to meet those expectations. And that has to start with the teachers. They are the agents of change. But they need to be comfortable that the administration is going to support them when they make those classroom decisions, or they make those decisions in the hallway. That's a really important part of it as well. If you don't feel supported, it's difficult to go out on that limb on your own. Then you also need to understand that not every behavioral issue is simply cut and dry. There are underlying factors that go into account. Frustration in the classroom, frustration with the material, something going on outside of school, whatever the case may be, and you need to grasp those moments, and they need to be teachable moments. Children need to understand that they're going to make mistakes. If they're not, they're not learning and growing as people. And it's okay to make those mistakes, but what's not okay is to not take accountability for them and to make things right when you can. And that's a really important part of it. Keep them engaged, and the behavioral problems will go down.
This will be the last question, and then we'll have a little bit of time for everybody to wrap up. Would you be willing to support appointment of an independent person, such as a Chamber of Commerce or a Bridges Bay Civic Association member, tally election results rather than a district employee? I think
it's
Lori.
Sure. I don't know why the decision was made otherwise, but I think it's a great suggestion.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like a pretty straightforward answer. I don't know what the motivation is for that. If there's a particular incident that people are concerned about. I guess it needs to be a discussion with the community, right? I don't think the board should all of a sudden just say, let's get the Chamber of Commerce involved. I'm not against it, certainly, but if it's something that the community wants, then they can go through the board, make their wishes known, then I think the board can go ahead and do that with the cooperation of the chamber.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to allow you now 2 minutes just to wrap it up and say whatever you would like to say about yourselves. I guess we'll start with Josh since Brian came first.
Well, listen, I said at the beginning why I wanted to get involved. This is one of the things I'm proudest of that I do, and you know, it's an enormous amount of time, but it's very rewarding time. It's time away from your family. It's time away from your kids. It's time that you spend in the middle of the night because you're working during the day, but it's also something where you can see true results for what matters. And you know, when we talked about the budget, we talked about the growth and how we're doing, you understand, if you've been to meetings, kind of where we want to go. And you know, I really hope that I have the opportunity to continue to serve. I think that with the path that we put this district on and the plans that we put in place, continuity is important. Lack of continuity really and changing direction constantly does stop growth. So I really hope that I have the ability to continue to serve the district and continue to focus on that growth. Thank you.
Okay, so I think what I'd like to add is just some opinions, feelings about our district. When I look at where we are here, both on Long Island as a whole, it's a very resource-rich environment, right? Not just in terms of national laboratories and universities and things like that, but the culture that we have and natural resources. And our community especially, this is really a great place to live. You know, I came here 14 years ago, not because I put a pin on a map and said Center Ridge, that's where I want to live. It was sort of accidental. And it seemed like a nice place to raise a family. It was a small community. It had a very laid-back feel. And being here these past 14 years, I see that really this is a great place. We have a small town feel. We have a community that communicates with each other, that rallies. You can ask people that know better than me, but our PTA raises tens of thousands of dollars a year and puts that into our children's education. That's a great thing. If there's a tragedy or something happens, the community finds out about it and helps each other out. So really, there's no reason that we should not have a better school district that gives all of our students more opportunities and better academic outcomes. And I feel that there is room to do this. I don't see an impediment. I don't see any reason that we shouldn't achieve that. And with some of the things I've outlined, I'd like to see that occur. And if I have your support, I look forward to providing my abilities to bring that about on the board. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, number one. And I want to thank the candidates tonight, and good luck in the vote coming up next week. My goal here tonight was just try to give you a little bit glimpse about the person that I am. I'm a passionate advocate for children. I do have some friends in the audience, and at the risk of offending them, some of the best relationships I have made is with the children in this community through coaching at the youth level and then here at the high school. There is nothing more gratifying than when a child seeks you out to speak to you when you're at the football field or you're here for a concert or for any other reason that you might be up at the school. One of the things I tell my students is, if you don't want an honest answer, then don't ask me because I'm going to tell you. Go find somebody else. You will know where I stand on every single issue. If I come out in public and I vote yes, it's because I support it. And if I don't, then I will vote no. And not because I don't want to be unified with the board, but because I think it's important. You voted me in to represent you, and I'm going to do that with passion and honesty and integrity if you vote me in. So thank you very much.
If given the opportunity, I feel like I can make a lot of contributions to the school district and with the board and for the members of this community. I'm always looking, I'm always researching, I'm always looking at other school districts, looking at things to incorporate over here. to make it the best that we can do with what we have. I feel like I've been able to unite the community as far as whatever things that I have been doing and in terms of whatever fundraisers or whatever, because the community is a valuable resource. They give to everything, they give back, they support, and I think that if we were able to effectively communicate what it is that we're doing, they would be just as involved with this process as well, and I think we can go even further that way. Like I said, I'm in a lot of school districts, and I'm always comparing, just because I want to learn. So, I mean, we have the opportunity to either compare and despair or compare and repair. I feel like we can fix what is broken, work with what we have, and we can move forward and do even more great things with the school district. So, thank you.
I kind of feel that I got a raw deal. Having the one-year term was kind of like when you stain your deck and you're just about ready to be done and you realize there's no stain left in the can. You have to start all over. It took me like 6 months to get my feet wet and to feel comfortable. I'm still trying to figure out what my role is. I think I'm much better on paper than I am in person, if you can figure that out. I'm a little, you know, still a little nervous about talking in this type of forum, but I love what we're doing. I love the path that we're on. I love the people that I get to work with. Consistency within the board, I think, is important to drive us forward. That's why I would really like to spend another 3 years on the board to, you know, see us to the end of our five-year goal. Thank you. Thank
you, Kathleen. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you. Thank all of you for coming out and spending your valuable time educating yourself about who our candidates are, and please remember to get out and vote next week.